there we go.
Let's just resume and let us commence with our business team from Step SA. I'm informed that is the team is led by the statistician general himself with his introduction. And about the people he brought along are Ms. Kifile Masiteng, who is the DDG of Nation and Social Statistics. Welcome, Kifile. I see Ms. Singa Maluleka is supposed to be here. If he is not here, he must be marked absent because his name is on the list. I don't see him. Ms. Yandisa Mbecheni, Executive Manager, Labor Force Survey Reengineering Program. You're welcome. Dr. Mashab Mahale, Provincial Head, Gauteng. Welcome. Mr. Marius Cronier, Provincial Head, Western Cape. It's easier for you to make it. We also have Ms. Tabiseng Makata, Provincial Head, KwaZulu-Natal. Welcome. And Mr. Trevor Osterweg, Manager Communications. He makes it a point that he's here. He's also distributed some colorful material. I would like him to tell us why all the color. Without wasting time, I know some of the snacks that come with the tea that we had earlier arrived late once we were already inside. And it might as well just wait for the time when we have when we break for tea, because we cannot stop now on the to go and entertain ourselves. I'm told also that the IT people are delayed to come and assist us with setting up the slides on the on the projectors. Since we have the hard copy of the presentation, we are going to proceed. If he comes, he can always assist us later on. So without wasting time, the floor is yours, SG. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nene, Chairperson, and Honorable Members of Parliament. May I say once again that our coming here is a very interesting coming here, because we talk about the things that we have to do rather than the things that probably we have done wrong, which used to mark us some years back. So one has to seize the opportunity to talk to the progressive improvements that the organization has achieved over time. Secondly, it would be remiss of me if I didn't state that the issue of the community survey, where Karen Mon of the Star published that 600 million was a bungle, and said the same delivered results that could not be relied upon and attributed that to the chair of council. That matter has been set straight, and the Star has apologized on what it did. Uninformed Karim Mon misinformed and has retracted what she stated. Unfortunately, it was rather too late, because it was 8 to 9 months late. But nonetheless, in my language, that doesn't rot. And that debt was corrected. That counts. So that issue has been set straight. So in many ways, when we launched the Quarterly Labour Force Survey and briefed Parliament about it, it has to be understood in the context of continuous improvement that the organization started as early as 2002-2003. And that journey continues. There were a number of concerns raised around the labor force survey, regarding of the data, its frequency, the level of timeliness and coverage. And the two, the DDG here and the creative manager here, will take us through the presentation around what improvements have been made in terms of timeliness, relevance, and so on. But may I say that we've moved from a survey that was run twice a year to a survey that runs four times a year, a survey that releases results within a month of the last quarter. And we believe that policy response, or rather policy, will then be adequately informed, and then it can make choices on how it responds. So the issue of lateness of data and so on and so on is well behind us, and we believe that the data will be useful. If those few were checked, may I hand over to Ms. Masike, who is the DDG Population and Social Statistics, to carry out today the document.
Honorable Nene, honorable members, thank you for the opportunity that we have been given to come and give the progress that has been made in the re-engineering of the labor force, that we have launched the first results on the 28th of August, and we are currently going across the country in all the provinces to make sure that the results have been disseminated, understood, and hopefully will be used for informing the policies in the country. The process started in 2005, and as SNC has said, it was based on the concerns that had been raised by the stakeholders themselves. And from June 2005, a decision was taken to re-engineer the LFF, and that work was given to Ms. Yandi Fambecheni as the executive manager or the project manager since then. And on the basis of that, she has set up a permanent team in the organization to make sure that the sustainability and continuity of that work. And what she has done since then was that there has been international labor organization consultation since the beginning of the work, and we have had some consultations with the SADC and East African countries in December 2006, where we sat and looked at the issues around labor market statistics collection, practices in other countries, and how they would have contributed to the work that we do in SSA. We have had meetings with the key stakeholders in December 2006 and 2008, this year, June, where we gave them the progress in terms of how far we have gone in the re-engineering of LFF, and we have also had other stakeholders in March and June this year. And we were fortunate to have a group of statisticians consultants that were here with us since the beginning of the program, and some of them are still with us to ensure that the work gets sustained, and they have really held our hands. And as the work was done, we went through four large-scale tests that we tried to have as part of our re-engineering process. In April 2006, the test was done in Limpopo only in April, where the questionnaire that was developed based on the changes that were recommended and the use of the GPS were tested. Then in 2006 of September, the four provinces were included in the test, and in Limpopo, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and Eastern Cape, where the revised core questionnaire based on what came out of the April test and the real-time management system and the limited test of the GPS were done. In September 2007, we went to all the provinces testing all the new processes and the new systems that we have, and we looked at new training methods for the field workers. And in October to December 2007, we went full force to all the provinces to test the fact that we are saying we are collecting data on a continuous basis over a 3-month period, and then see how we would collect the data after the 3 months and how it came out to be. And on the basis of that, we have the report on the outcomes of the data, or of the data and the tests on the website. And for more information on the report that was written by the IMF and the tests, some of the information that arose, I would encourage that people visit our website. And the background to the QLS 5 is that this is a quarterly continuous household survey through which we measure the three components of the labor market, which is we measure in terms of people, those who are employed, those who are unemployed, and those who are not economically active. We also try to disaggregate the data on the basis of the labor industry, occupation sector, hours that have been worked, and we also disaggregate the data or publish the data based on discouraged work seekers. Looking at how it is conducted, we go to a sample of 30,000 dwelling units across the country, where we collect information from over 60,000 persons or people or adults of working age, 15 to 64 of age, and then we conduct face-to-face interviews. Looking at the structure of the questionnaire, the cover page of the questionnaire, and the questionnaire is in the guide, the small booklet would show what we have as a sample of our questionnaire. And what we see is that on the cover page, we collect information that would enable us to track the PSU number and the number that is that is used to identify the questionnaire itself. Then the first section of the questionnaire is used to collect the information of social demographic issues, that is our names, our age. I think we also have something like our telephone number that can be used. And I think the last question is on education, on that section. And the second question, the second section of the questionnaire is mainly for each of the six respondents within the household that are 15 years and older. And the second question just look at those respondents that are employed and those respondents who are not employed. And the third question, the third section looks at the respondents that are unemployed. Therefore, if in section two you have been identified as unemployed, you would be taken to section three. And if in section two you are identified as employed, you will be taken to section four of the questionnaire. And the persons engaged in non-market production are referred to the unemployed or not economically active questions, that is in section three. Looking at how we define some of the labor market concepts, we move from the working age population, which is 15 to 64 years, and on the basis of that, we say we disaggregate it or we divide it according to those who are employed, those who are unemployed, and those who are not economically active. And those who are employed would be working for pay, for profit, or family gain. And those who are unemployed will be available to work or have taken steps or active steps to look for work. Amongst those that are not economically active, we find that it's those people who say they were not available to work, and those that would say they were available to work but have not taken any active steps to look for the work. That would be including the discouraged work seekers. So the number of people who are employed and the number of people who are not employed are referred to as our labor force, the economically active population. The calculation of the unemployment is the proportion of those people who are unemployed as a percentage of the labor force, that is the sum of the employed and the unemployed. And then when we look at the changes that have been there, we have seen that we have taken some decisions in terms of the data and the way we disaggregate or we publish it. we have moved to say we talk about the labor force aid or the working population age group at 16 to 64 years instead of 15 to 65. This is mainly to make sure that we have greater international comparability. When we look at the employment, we will only look at the issues or the persons that are involved in market production activities. The non-market production activities, yes, will be collected, but will not be part of the employed. The discouraged work seekers will be out of the not economically active persons, only those whose reason for not seeking work was any of the three that I would say here. It would be because they have lost hope in finding work, and they could have said that they don't have relevant skills or qualifications, or they would have said that there's no work available in the area. So those are the three defining components of the discouraged work seekers. Looking at the informal sector, we comprise it of both employers and employees. For them, they are classified from the employed number of persons. But for them to be classified as unemployment in the informal sector of employment, it would be because they are employers, and those would be people with own account workers and persons working unpaid for their household businesses. But the businesses that they would have, the household businesses, would not be registered for them. And when we talk about the employees, those would be people who would be working in this sector and would have said that no income tax is deducted from their salary by the employer. And when you ask them how many people work in the establishment that they are involved in, there would be less than 5 employees. Therefore, both those employers and employees defined by those two dimensions would be people to be classified as being under the informal sector. How do we define the discouraged work seekers? We would ask the person about his or her activities over the past 4 weeks, as to whether the person has been actively looking for a job. If they say no, and we would ask as to whether would you have wanted to work if there was a job in the previous work. If the person says yes, and then we would say, then what would have been the reason for not trying to find work or start find a business in the past 4 weeks? And then the reasons, as I said, would have been that no jobs available in the area, I am unable to find work that requires the skills that I have, and I have lost hope of finding any kind of work. And then they would be further asked the question, are you available to start working or business? Were you available in the work in the week before the survey was undertaken? If they say they were, then we classify them as discouraged. If they say they were, they would not be available, then we say they are definitely classified under not economically active. Looking at the labor market indicators themselves, what has been seen over the period, we started the survey on the 14th of January, this year. And since the 14th of January, we collected the first quarter between January and March, and the second quarter was collected between June. And what has been seen is that the quarterly changes have brought up about 106,000 new jobs in the market, and that was an increase of about 0.8% quarter to quarter. And the number of unemployed persons has gone down by 77%. That was 1.8%, and the discouraged number of persons has gone down by 98,000 persons, and that was an 8.3% decline in the number of discouraged workers. When we look at the labor market indicators themselves, what we have seen is that the average unemployment rate in South Africa in the second quarter has been estimated at 23.1% of the working population, 26.8% of which are women and 19.9% of which are men. And the unemployment, the employment population ratio, which is the absorption rate, has shown that there is higher absorption for men than there is for women, but the total average would be estimated at 44.7 for the second quarter. The participation rate has been estimated at 58.1% with a 0.1% decline. Looking at employment and concentrating on market activities only, what we have seen is that between the quarter one and quarter two, there has been 71,000 out of the 106,000 jobs that we have spoken about have been from the community and social services. The trade has accounted for the highest number of jobs that are created. That is 3.1 million, or 22.6% of the total employment in quarter two. Looking at employment by occupation, we have seen that elementary jobs have accounted for the largest share. That is about 3.1 million or 22.8% of total employment in quarter two. And the increase in elementary jobs has accounted for about 75,000 jobs out of the 106,000 additional jobs that we have talked about. Looking at the employment in the formal and informal sector, the quarterly employment gains of the 106,000 that have been estimated have been seen to be more in the formal sector, which has increased by about 73,000 or about 0.8%. The informal sector has contributed or is about 70% of total employment. When we look at the employment in the formal and informal sector again in quarter two, what is clear is that the trade has been the most contributing industry that has accounted for 46.1% of employment in the informal sector. Now we will move over to unemployment. Looking at unemployment by sex, as I said, there has been higher unemployment for women than there is for women for men. So we have seen that the quarterly fall in unemployment is largely among men. Then looking at what we call the long-term unemployment, we have seen that the quarterly decline in unemployment would have been attributed to the reduction in the short-term unemployment, which has gone down by about 112,000 persons. But persons in the long-term unemployment have accounted for over half of the total unemployment, which is 58.5%. Therefore, there are more people who have been unemployed for longer time in the country. Looking at the rate of unemployment by province, we have seen that the largest quarterly difference in unemployment has been in the Eastern Cape. That has gone down by 3.3%. But what we have seen is that the South African or the country level unemployment rate has decreased by 0.4 percentage points from 23.5 in quarter one to 23.1 in quarter two. Looking at unemployment rate by population group, it has been clear that the African women have had the highest unemployment rate, estimated at 31.1% when they are compared to other population groups. Looking at the non or the not economically active persons or populations, and what we have seen is that the people who are students account for the largest number of the not economically active population. That is about 5.5 7 million in quarter two, around 44.1% of the not economically active persons are those people who are at school, either universities or all levels of education. And the discouraged workers had the largest quarterly decline that has moved down by about 8.3% by or 98,000 persons in absolute numbers. Looking at involvement of persons in non-market production activities, what we have seen is that fetching water or collecting wood or dung is the most attributing or the most contributing non-market activity, and it is followed by subsistence farming. A majority of persons in the non-market activity are those that are not economically active. We had looked at the historical revisions of the NFS. We used this just to look at the overlap between NFS 17, that was conducted in March 2008, and the QLFS first quarter, that was done in January to March. This was mainly to make sure that we do not break the series. But remember, the last official unemployment or employment statistics that was in the public domain would have been from September 2007. The next after that would be what we have from this statistic. But for us to also make sure that we are able to correctly revise all the series, we have run the NFS 17. And this is what the results have shown. The revised series have shown that there is a little bit higher employment that would have been estimated than originally published. But if you look at the absolute number, the numbers are not so significantly different. If we look at the unemployment, we also have seen that the trend remains the same. When we revise the figures, there is a very slight difference in the absolute numbers in terms of the number of people or the unemployment rate that has been published originally. The same has been seen as the trend for those who are not economically active. The trend remains the same. There is a slight, because of the revision in absolute numbers, difference in terms of the numbers of those people that are not economically active. We also look at the unemployment as a rate, and when we look at it as a rate, we got a bit more confident that the series is still going to continue within the correct trend, whereby the revised series shows lower unemployment rates than originally published, but not significantly. We sat in the organizations and tried to talk about the sources of the differences that we have seen. Some of the factors have been that non-market activities, we took a decision to exclude them from employment in the QLFS. The different consequences of persons in the market are not as about the non-market activities. And then there are also different instruments. We have a shorter core and less respondent fatigue. And the questionnaire has also been shortened to try and remove some of the variables or some of the questions that we think are not primary sources of the labor market dynamics. And then we have also worked on a continuous collection of data from the household versus the point whereby we used to collect only 2 weeks in March and 2 weeks in June, in September of every year. Therefore, we are continuously in the field. And we have also introduced individual questionnaires within one group, within one questionnaire, if you can look at the questionnaire that is in the guide. And one of the qualities that we have introduced has been to have a permanent staff for QLSS, versus what we have been doing, getting contract workers. Therefore, we feel that if we have a permanent field staff, that can also be attributable, maybe yes, in future, to the quality of the data that we get, and we have used different population benchmarks. The announcement that we made when we released the data is that we will look at time-related underemployment as a new phenomenon in the labor market, and we're hoping that by the end of this month we would have a report and it will be on our website. We will look at the measures of underutilization of labor, and that will also be introduced in our on our website. We will also try to look at the characteristics of the unemployed. That would be the new entrants, the job losers, the job givers, and the re-entrants into unemployment. And we will look at other factors of informal employment. All this will be posted on the website once they have been done. But the terms as they appear here, all of them are in the guide. So in the meantime, I would encourage that we get into the term, we will get them in the guide. And when we introduce the publication, it will be easier to relate to them. On that note, thank you.
Thanks. I don't know whether there are any additions that the FG and the other colleagues would want to add before I open for discussion.
Yes, sir.
Just the point that I didn't raise earlier, the Risenga Maluleke couldn't be with us this morning. The daughter took ill, so he couldn't fly out. But the daughter is fine. She's ill, but not serious. But I think Yandini wish to add, or we'll take questions. We'll see that.
Okay, she said she'll take questions. Okay, that's going to give you a break. Okay, members, there we have it. It's before us. I did indicate that it's been on the website now since this release, and there has been discussions in other quarters. This is the official forum for such discussions, so that we do not rely on those. And that is why we do not want to fall prey to some of those false information that may find themselves retracted 10, 12, 9 months later, because with us we have direct access to this institution. And we regard these engagements as the official engagements, other than the ones that take place in the media. Are there any questions from members? Mr. Mbuni, Dr. George, Mr. Marais, and Ms. Phelps.
Thanks, Chair. We're informed that the quarterly level for survey is now an international norm or international standard that all countries have to shift to. Then how long, or let me see my research question, say no. Why did you take so long to shift into this internationally accessible standard? Instead, we were using the labor force survey all along. My second question here is the quality of jobs that are created. Are they, temporary jobs, or perhaps they last for 18, 16 months down the line and disappear again? What will be the effect in our employment statistics? And my last question here is on this document under the unemployed, in terms of professions or in terms of table 4, characteristics for unemployed South Africa. I see that there are quite a lot of people who are with skills but are unemployed. You've got managers, professionals, technicians, clerks, skilled agriculture, and yet you talk that there are no skills in South Africa. Could you perhaps tell us why are the people not employed, or they are reasons for being employed? And perhaps if there was a breakdown in terms of sex and race,
Thank you, Church.
Thank you, Jay. Under the not economically active people, in particular the discouraged work seekers, one of the reasons why they give, or you've given for them being discouraged, is the lack of skills or qualification, or there's no work in the particular area. Do we actually know the level of skill of this group of people? And then on the non-economically active, there's a category for other, which is 896,000. What would, or who would actually fall into this particular category? And then finally, on the questionnaire, you've got a, you have a section for marital status. And I was just wondering what the purpose of that was, whether it was to identify the actual marital status or what kind of sort of support structure the person was in. If you could maybe just clarify that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of where you started with consultations, you mentioned that you have, you know, dealt or had consultations with key stakeholders and other stakeholders. Can you give us an indication of who are these key stakeholders and other stakeholders? In other words, who are representative of that? Then, secondly, about the comparison, and I'm going to be blunt in referring to the narrow and the broad definition of unemployment. I mean, we can work on the narrow one and say it's 23 point whatever percent, and you know, that's relatively good. Eventually, it will impact on the government's obligation to people without and that is the broad definition. That will be a liability on the state eventually. And currently, it seems like you are steering away from that. And obviously, one must be realistic. Eventually, it is a liability for the state, and that is in terms of the broad definition and not the narrow definition. So can you give us that information as well? And then, very importantly, is, you know, it is fantastic for us to say that we have got improvements. What does that mean? You know, how does that compare with what the target is, where we ought to be, and how does that compare with other African countries and also our trading partners? Because I mean, we can live on an island and think that we're fantastic, but the moment that we relate to others, we say, hey, it's a serious wake up call. You know, we don't live in paradise. We live in this global village. Thank you, sir.
Ms. Fox.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies for being late. I was at another meeting. Fortunate though in being able to read some of the documentation beforehand, like most of my colleagues. But there are a couple of things that you may have answered during the presentation, which I had questions on. The two of them, the first one is the kind of question. I know that StatsSA are trying to really focus in and laser into this unpacking of unemployment, and I see that you're going to be looking at seasonal and that kind of employment. But when somebody, I think internationally in Africa, wherever you go, there's a tendency when one is receiving a very small income to indicate that one is unemployed, as it were. Now, how are you able to drill down? Because I think here you have brought into the questionnaire type of, or certainly what the consequences of that are present. You've tried to drill right down to, are you employed at any other time of the year or whatever. But if someone is receiving less than a particular sum of money, let's say less than the grant, they may well feel inclined to indicate themselves as unemployed. Are you able in your questionnaire to ascertain if there's any form of income coming in to that particular household? at all, other than, if you like, a government grant. The second thing that would be useful to know, and I see that you are going to be doing that in the future, is this kind of seasonal employment. In terms of that, some people would not regard themselves as being seasonally employed if they choose, if you like, to work in what could be a peak employment season. Let's give you some examples of this. In an area, they know that shows are held. In an area, they know that certain activities take place, at which time they will know that they can sell their labor. Of course, it's not a question of choice. It's the only time they can sell their labor, because that's the only time anyone is looking to employ them. Are you able to get that kind of information into them? Because it could well be that when you add up what they get in those 4 months or 5 months, they're earning more than their neighbors during the whole year. Take a domestic worker or something like that. My final one in relation to those two, chairperson, is to do with the retail situation. Certainly, judging from the media, we learn that the retail sector is under serious pressure with respect to jobs. Now, is there any time in the survey that you're able to hone in on these high unemployments that would crop up as a result of environmental issues? Thank you.
Okay, let's try and respond to those questions that have been asked. Perhaps in your responses, if you could draw our attention to areas that explain exactly the categorization of the different unemployment types, as members, most questions that come from members seem to want to refer to what kind of unemployment exactly are we faced with. There is an argument that it is structural. Some elements of your findings sort of, I mean, do touch on some kind of cyclical and seasonal, as Ms. Fabs might have indicated. And we do pick up a little bit of frictional unemployment as well. But would you want us to give us a picture as to what exactly, what is our actual unemployment disease, you know, if we were to put a finger on it, as you respond to the questions that members have.
So thank you, Chair. The DDG and the EN here will answer some of the questions, or rather the majority of the questions. I'll take three or four of the questions. We've got questions from Honorable Nguni, Dr. George, Honorable Marie, and Honorable Fabs. Why did it take long? What is the job? Unemployment? What skills do these people possess? I think that question also was asked by Dr. Honorable George, as well as the one on marital status. Consultation, who are the key stakeholders, the issue of the broad and narrow, and how do we compare with others in the world. I'll pick up on the question, why did it take that long? It did take long, I must accept, but Honourable members will recall that we came and indicated that from about 2003 we will be waiting and reviewing the theory of statistics. It was quite impossible to start on all fronts. We were eager and we wanted to start on all fronts, but the reality zoomed in and showed us that we will start with the CPI, we will go from there to the GDP, then move on to the labour markets. Even not run a census in 2006 because of the load of work we had. the other person that comes is there, why has it taken this long to release the reweighted CPI? The reasons are the same, that it can only happen that time, and that time is what it will happen in. So with all the good intentions that we should have gone ahead earlier, we could only start then. When you look at the results are not very different between the old labor force survey and the new quarter labor force survey. But I don't think we should look at the results, but we should look at the quality of methods, that the quality is embedded and is embraced in the method. So we have invested in the dependability and reliability of the methods that we have applied, including the infrastructure that we have put in place now of a permanent field force, which we didn't have before. So that investment gives us the ability to demonstrate transparently that the methods have actually improved, and that is the remit of the organization. The question on the by Honorable Marae on how does this compare? I take the question probably at two levels, and I'll answer it at the one level where our remit starts and ends, and then I'll speculate on the other. The first level is, how does the old QLFF, LFF, labor force survey, and the new one compare? We have shown that the differences are very minimal in terms of employment and unemployment. If it has to do with the Millennium Development Goals as to, are we going to have unemployment by 2015? Our, the answer is, we will measure and see whether it's been done. Policy must answer the question, will it have unemployment? And we will come and measure and say where it has been halved or not. The second question on the comparison is, how does our unemployment compare with other countries on the continent and elsewhere? The key issue, I think, in South Africa that one sees most of the time is the difference in unemployment, particularly when you compare it to Brazil. The proportions of people employed are similar except when it comes to agriculture. In Brazil, a good number of people are also engaged in agriculture. In South Africa, that number is quite small comparatively. So that's the key difference when one looks at that. When one compares with the rest of the continent, there is a huge informal sector on the continent, and of course, as well as agriculture. So in terms of industrial classifications such as mining, manufacturing, and so on the continent, there isn't a comparable breakdown with South Africa and the continent. On the continent, you see a lot more informal sector as well as agriculture. When you look at Brazil, you see a comparable breakdown at the difference you see in agriculture. That is, Brazil has a lot more people engaged in agriculture, which in South Africa is not the case. The numbers are, or the proportions are, too low in South Africa. The question on I think I'll leave it there. My two colleagues will take the rest of the questions, and they'll tell me which ones we can start to go, and we can start to go.
Yeah, on the question on table 4, on whether we can have breakdown by race and sex, that could be done, but it is not in any of our releases. That is, when you're looking at the skills of the unemployed, their occupation, that you see that some of them were managers in their previous jobs, others were professionals and technicians and so on. We are able to give that information by sex and race, but it is not in our releases, in the release that you have in front of you. And the question on who is the other 896,000 people who are discouraged? The other reasons relate to people who said the reason they did not look forward, because for us to say, okay, are you discouraged? Are you inactive in the not economically active question? We give about 16 reasons in the questionnaire. But the ones that we have given numbers for in the release, I think it's about student homemaker, people who said they were ill or disabled, too old or too young to work, and then we have discouraged work seekers. The other reasons relate to people who are undergoing training to look for so that they can be able to find work. And other reasons relate to no transport available. So we lumped all of them together because the numbers were too small to be separated. So other has a whole lot of categories under it. And if you want to see where these reasons are, if you go to the guide at the back, there's a questionnaire on question 3.8. We have all of the reasons there. on small income, in the new questionnaire, we don't collect any information on earning. So we have no cutoff point where we say if you earn so much, therefore, you should be classified as unemployed. What we do to classify people as unemployed, we take them through a series of questions. We say, did you do any work last week? The person says no. We say, did you look for work in the last 4 weeks? If the person says yes, then we say, were you available to work in the last week? Then if the person says yes, then they are unemployed. But about whether they have any other source of income, we do ask a question on how do they support themselves. I think it's somewhere in the questionnaire. It's question 3.19. We ask people who are unemployed and those who are inactive, we say to them, how do you support yourself? Then we say, are you supported by persons in the household, outside the household? Do you get unemployment insurance fund? So we have all those questions there that would then tell you what other support people get. But on earnings, we've decided to have a module that will concentrate on earnings, and we can ask more information than what we used to ask where income is concerned. And this module will start, we're going to start collecting information for it next year. So it is not in this questionnaire. Let me see. On the stakeholders, who are our key stakeholders that we consulted, it was the Department of Labor, the Reserve Bank, National Treasury, and the Presidency, because we had to talk to them about certain concepts and definitions, particularly those relating to what you classify as employment. So we're thinking, do we still continue to say people who are doing both market activities and non-market activities are employed? Now we have to consult with them on a series of issues relating to our concepts. Other stakeholders are your researchers, people who work in government, local, provincial, national government. We did a series of consultations with them. And narrow versus expanded definition, I think the SG and the DGG can respond to that. And on the retail sector, how are we able to know what industries are losing employment? Because we now have a continuous quarterly survey, we are able to track throughout the year on a quarterly basis. We can track the changes between the industries, and that's how we get to know. But when people say, no, I know there will only be work in my area at this particular time, when you ask about employment, we ask you, in the last week, did you do any work? And then we tell you what kind of activities you should have been engaged in for us to classify you as employed. Now, if you say, no, I didn't, I was waiting for this, then you say, did you look for work? Then you'll go to be unemployed. But if you say there will be, I know for sure, there will be a function in December, and it is now January, and if you have not looked for work and you are not available to work, then you are unemployed. But if you are waiting, then you say you are inactive and you did not look for work and you are not available, then you say you are not economically active. So even though people might know that there will be jobs at a particular point in time, they have to go within the confines of how we classify people to say they are employed, they are unemployed, they are not economically active. Because that is also comes to seasonal work. We apply the same rules. I think over to you. Thanks.
Seems like a follow-up on some of the responses that we've had. Let's take them before we proceed with the answers. Mr. Mngoni and then Ms. Fox.
Thank you, Chair. My main question on the table 4 was that if we've got these professionals, technicians, of which I think some of them is scarce skills, why are these people unemployed as fact that they're classified as unemployed?
Okay. Ms. Fox, what was the follow-up?
A follow-up just on the retail issue again and on what are called seasonal, but to do with specific functions. I think the response I got didn't quite capture my, perhaps what I was looking for. This is a quarterly survey, and the questions, as you put it quite rightly, seem to refer to the previous week. And are you still looking? Of course, I'm not going to look for anything in the previous week if it's coming up in 2 months. So if you could still be within that quarter, because as I understand it, you've got 3 months in the quarter. So you could lose out on those functional or seasonal type of issues, where indeed much more funds, much more of an income could be captured than those who are actually working on the farms, for example. Your income may be the same, but you may work on 3 occasions in the year. Or form. So I'm asking, if you have a question in the survey that could capture that grouping of people, as it were. I'm thinking of, for example, people who pick fruit, people who are musicians, people who are cooking for functions, that kind of thing.
Mr. Maria also had a follow-up on his question. He responded to all 3 of them, but they all would want an exhaustive response.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just again on the stakeholders, I just want to make sure, in other words, it's only government type of stakeholders that you have dealt with, not employee organisations, not civil society, not organised labour, not organised agricultural or business or any of those that could have shed some light on these issues.
Let me start with Mr. Mngoni on why professionals and managers are not getting jobs. I think that can be answered by the FT and the DCJ. It's a policy issue. I don't know. That question, the numbers cannot tell us why.
You do not want to take responsibility for that. Okay. I hope the DG is also brave enough also to take responsibility for policy. Question.
On the question on the retail, if you go back there, madam, on the question on retail work and seasonality, yes, when we classify people as employed, we have to follow certain guidelines. Now, we will still ask you, in the last week, did you do any work? And you say no. And then we ask you, what was the main reason you were absent from your job or business last week? There's a question where we ask you that. And people can give you all sorts of reasons, and these reasons are on question 2.7 of the questionnaire. And some of them are that it's seasonal work. And once you say it's seasonal work, we take you to questions on unemployment. Because there's no guarantee that if you're picking fruit this season, that next time you will still have a job to go back to. So we will take you through to questions on unemployment. However, we do have numbers where we can tell you that of the people who did not work last week, some of them were waiting for seasonal work. On whether we consulted with agriculture, we did organized labor, we did. I didn't give you the full list of stakeholders, but for the key ones, it was those 4: National Treasury, the Presidency, Department of Labor, and the Reserve Bank. But on other stakeholders, agriculture was there, organized labor was there, researchers, we had a whole variety of stakeholders. I think we covered almost everybody who had interest in the collection of labor market statistics.
For if you were chips in. On the follow-up questions, the key test to stakeholder consultation is whether finally wherein we set the document to test it complies with international standards, it did. But that was based as well on the comprehensive consultation across all stakeholders. The question that the Honourable Fab asked, we also have a quarterly employment survey which asks industry the levels of employment in retail. It, however, excludes informal sector. And when we look at the size of informal sector in trade, we see that it is quite significant. So in many ways, if we relied only on that one, we would lose a lot on the informal sector. Nonetheless, we can see fluctuations in the levels of employment over time from that survey that given for employment. Second thing is that because of the methodology of a random sample that we conduct, the issue that you raise will be covered and will compensate itself in the nature of the randomness of the selection. So whoever you lose is not there, you will gain here because of the randomness of the survey. The question of the broad and the narrow, which Andy says we have to take responsibility for. I thought that all of us are guided by methodology rather than hierarchy, but she seems to factor in hierarchy, which is quite good as well, but she still respects us. the way we have structured the flow chart, it actually gives you the broad and the narrow. But because of international comparability, you have to provide the narrow as the official unemployment. So the broad has not been hidden because you still find it in the discouraged. And then, of course, it gives you reasons why people are discouraged. And I think it provides a better understanding for policy of why certain things are happening in the way they are happening. I thought that on those follow-up questions, one could give about the why engineers and professionals are unemployed. The reasons are in the document. That probably there is no job, although they are professional. But I think it's for labor market specialists to try and understand why, when a person is professional, they still don't have jobs. Is the labor market information sufficiently transparent? And can people actually, they have the interview skills, or they get shocked the first time they get into an interview and they don't get a job? It's the question of an unemployed crisis, which we confronted a lot of times.
Thanks. I'm not sure how Honourable Mugumi found out that the skilled people are not employed. But I think, yes, there is an issue around what we get is self-reported information where people will tell us about their levels of employment and so on. The issue around the quality of jobs is a derived policy issue that I think, if you were to talk about it, there are many assumptions that you have to put into saying this is the quality of the jobs. Unfortunately, we count the number of jobs and then disaggregate them according to the classifications that we have. The quality is a bit of a subjective issue. And the reasons, I think, for some of the people who would be skilled and would be without the jobs, then it is going to be by sector, by area of work, by type of skill that you have, and it's going to be a supply and demand issue within the area in which you are qualified and your ability to be able to get in. This is a social scientist assumptions into an economic issue. But in terms of us, what we do, we count the jobs. Then the other issues around the comparability of South Africa with other countries. I think South Africa is no exception to the high levels of unemployment as part of the developing countries. But what is clear is that also a lot of work has been done internationally to improve from our side, the statistician, the area of measurement of work. And I think then that goes to the question that Honorable Fox asked about a better understanding of unemployment. And there is work with the ILO where most of the emerging dimensions and emerging phenomena within the measurement of work are being discussed for us to be able to understand how would we say somebody is unemployed, but then what would be the dynamics of the livelihoods of the unemployed. Therefore, there's work that has been done, and as part of the report that we will be coming up with, we will be including some of those, including the sector of trying to understand the dynamics within the informal employment with the sectors that they have talked to. Therefore, as this work continues, there's also work to technically try to understand the emerging phenomena and concepts, and we will be trying to make sure that we fit them into the work. Now that we have a dedicated team that works only on the labor market. And on the issue of the narrow and broad issue, yes, South Africa, again, is no exception to the other countries. There is that confusion. Each and every country understands that there is official and unofficial, or narrow and expanded. What has been interesting is that in the papers I've seen, some of the researchers, some of the policy people have calculated the expanded, and it has really given hope. I remember there was a 15% difference as we started, but for this one that we have done, I've seen that many people have calculated it at 29% as compared to the 23% of the narrow. So the number is not hidden. The number is there, but what we publish would be the official or the narrow. But the way we give the data, it allows everybody to be able to individually calculate the expanded unemployment rate. Thanks.
Yeah,
thank you.
Just the question that Honorable Marie asked around how do we compare, probably to, without attributing any causality, but just laying the kind of things that are there in South Africa that are not there in other countries, and that are there in other countries that are not there in South Africa. And then possibly they as policymakers can start exploring what are the key issues. I mentioned that Brazil has a proportionately high number of people employed in agriculture, a higher proportion, a much higher proportion, significantly higher than that you see in South Africa. And between South Africa and Brazil, the key difference in percentage points in unemployment can be attributed to the higher proportion of people that are employed in agriculture. Secondly, that when you compare South Africa with other African countries, the other African countries, the significant part of the difference is attributed to the large unemployment, or rather the large informal sector and agriculture. That thing, which doesn't exist both in Brazil and a good proportion of African countries, except probably for Tunisia, is that South Africa has a very strong official policy for social assistance, which is the pension system. I don't know how in combination those things impact or do not impact on labor market situations. I thought I'd just add that dimension of a very significant social assistance problem in the form of grants and pensions.
You still haven't been direct with regards to the question.
with what are we suffering from in terms of unemployment? That's how I should ask it. Is it structural? Is it cyclical? Is it frictional? What is our main disease? And to, I mean, I know it's also perhaps not your area. You know, what about the intervention? We've been on to CHIPSA, we've been on to all sorts of, you know, remedies and interventions to try and mitigate the issue of skills shortage because of the understanding that we're suffering from structure. I know maybe, you know, the survey would not adequately be able to put a finger on those things, but it helps to build your
I think part of the answer is when you look at the labor market information by wage. When you do that, you begin to explore possible answers. I think if you look at the African and the black and colored population, the unemployment there is structural. When you look at the white population and the Indian population, the unemployment there is more a fictional, yes. You know, when we used to play brother, and you are dominating your opponent, that is the African chess, and you say, he's moving like a white man looking for a job. You're moving purposelessly. That in the knowledge that they get a job immediately. So it's that fictional concept which we would expect as he played this African chess. But amongst the Africans, it's structural and it has to do with skills. So if we were to use our own environment as South Africa, and use the white population and the Indian population as a resource to answering the question, then it is intervening in the field and intervening very aggressively there to raise them to the level where whites and Indians are. And of course, that's a generational issue that has to be addressed, as an issue that has to be addressed quickly probably, but also knowing that it's a long-term thing. So I think the answers are here in South Africa, among in the information where we look at it by race. The remedy is there. Yeah.
Wanted to add?
No, I wanted to talk to two questions that you have not answered. On the skills, the level of skills of the discouraged, there was a question on that. We have two types of people who are discouraged, those who have worked before and those who have never worked before. If we have those who have worked before, we're able to find out from them what occupations they had before, what industries they worked in, and we also have their high level of education. But those who've never worked before, the only question we ask them is the high level of education, so we wouldn't have any information on their skills except the education-related skills. And on marital status, I think DJ Masutian will answer that on why we have a question on marital status in the LFS.
Yes.
The demographic components that we have, we use to also try to understand the family formations and to understand, as we try to understand the living conditions of the person that works. I remember the SD when he was looking at the unemployment from CS and saying that you find that it is mainly because of the mobility of the one family member household. Or now we are also starting to have what we have, the two-member family households. Therefore, we get to understand the family structures and how they also contribute to the dynamics of the labor market, just to understand the family formations and the structures demographically of the population that we are dealing with. And I think also on the issue of skills, there are interventions, Chair, and we are hoping that one day JITSA will give us the report and say, having identified the gap, that the skills that we have do not match the demand in terms of the economic need for the work that needs to be done. This is how far we have gone. But I think structurally in South Africa, we do have another phenomena of going not as fast as the rate of economic development is in terms of creating the skills that are supposed to be making sure that development happens. Therefore, it's a structural issue that has the issue of skills gap and the need for skills. If we look at the way South Africa is developing into a highly industrialized and getting more and more modernized, the types of skills that are needed are more technical than the type of skills that we currently sit with, and that also contributes to the gaps that we see. And on the issue of trading, if we look at the fact that the size of the informal sector is only, yes, the good part is that it's only 17% of the total employment. But when you look at the contribution, you find that contribution of trading is about 46% in the informal sector. Therefore, that's where you're going to see that these are the jobs that come today and go tomorrow, and that is where the higher level of mobility in terms of seasonality. And we're hoping that now that we have continuous collection, we'll be able to pick them up. And we are also having the questions that will assist us to pick them up at an individual or person level. Thank you.
There is a study that we ran in 2000, the self-employed and self-employed. And we are going to run it as a module again next year. It's an important study that needs to be looked at, in particular because it tells you about the behavior of the informal sector, the circumstances under which it performs, and who are possibly the winners and the losers in that kind of environment. Therefore, for policy purposes, to ease that environment, we need to focus on that. If you want to ask a question, who are the best, who provides the best assistance in that environment, or who provides the largest proportion of assistance in that environment? It is family members, friends, Mashonisa, the bank and the bank and all the other interventions that government has put across, like school and so on, don't feature there at all. So if you that's an area that needs to be explored quite aggressively. That's what that study says, and we'll be running it again in 2008, 2009. Yeah.
Interesting. Dr. Thank you, Chair. Thanks for clarifying the other category for me, but what I think is really clear there is that on the not economically active people, there's two types of not economically active people. There are those who are available and those who are not available. And on your categories, I'm on 3.8 with all the reasons. You can actually split them out into people that are available and who are not available. And in order to resolve the problem ultimately, we've got to identify to say, well, who is available and who is not available. If you are available, why are you not available? So I think it might be quite useful to maybe just disaggregate that a little bit more so that it can inform the policy process. Thanks, Chair.
Mr. Murray. Thank you, Chair. My question will link to that directly. Because if you say that the labor force is equal to the employable, and I think I'm correct in that, then it is very important to see who is categorized under not economically active and who is categorized under unemployed. Now, if you look at that category of, for instance, homemakers, and the one that I've got a passion for is disability, I personally know of many, many instances where people with a disability is discouraged. Why? Because year on year on year they try to get a job, they are available, they want to get a job, they must get a job to look after their family. They don't get a job. So they are clearly available and employable. But they are now categorized as not economically active, which is incorrect. The same with homemakers. So clearly, if that is done correctly, then you might get a different stats result eventually, and that is why one must always look at the credibility of the information that you get, and can you use that, or to what extent, you know, is that a incorrect version maybe of what goes on out there in the domain in South Africa. And I think that is very important, because then you can get to maybe a much better indication, and also what government must do, what we must do about that. Thank you.
When coming to unemployment figures at provincial level, do you factor in this problem of regional migration? You have seen earlier when you're presenting the CIS community survey that find that in places like Eastern Cape there are more children there than others. Now, do you factor that in Eastern Cape or Western Cape, unemployment has decreased because more people have moved out to Gauteng because they want to find their job, or how do you factor that in? And also on the issue of skills, sorry to call back this issue, but the president of the Black Management Forum, Jimmy Manye, is up in arms. You know, actually, we don't have shortage of skills in South Africa because industries or the private sector looks at formal qualifications, whereas we've got people who can do the job. Now they don't have more qualifications, but they know how to do the job. If you put them, say, okay, do the welding there, you can do the welding, you can do those things, but just because they've got no formal qualification, the people say, no, you can do the job, you can do the job. And as such, we tend to say, though, with the shortage of skills. Now, are you able to capture such people or such trends? We can actually have the skills, but it's only that people don't have formal qualification and are not given opportunities to perform those duties.
Jonathan?
Thank you, Chair. the first general point I want to raise relates to the reliability of information, data, statistics, and so on. It's a comment that, you know, says to me, we hope and trust that this matter is laid to rest once and for all. With such an amount of work that goes into the kinds of reports and results that we get, so that we don't find this question arising in future. Only, of course, in grave situations wherein such, you know, is to be. For a simple reason, we are about stability and also progress and development on all what we intend doing as a nation. So that's the first comment I wanted to make. The second point I want to raise relates to the very issue about the rise in employment of 106,000 within quarter one and quarter two. My interest there would be more about the spread in such. I see in the report that community and social services account for plus 50% of those. I would be keen also on the geographic such a spread, and also what could be constituting other, you know, services in the categorization that we have beyond community and social services. Another point I wanted to raise is the type of response that you typically get when you go through your survey. You have those questionnaires at some point dropped in houses or in households. People remain suspicious until this day and age, to a point where you are able to draw certain conclusions on your own on the types of responses that you gathered. Fact or fiction, to a point wherein you are able to say reliably, this is what we have moving forward as we do all those kind of things, planning, you name them. Now, as I said, people remain suspicious to a point where you don't know whether what you receive as a result of, you know, those questionnaires dropped, or people, you know, presenting those questions to people in households. Last one, a trend among females insofar as unemployment, especially among Africans, they remain high. The results are showing. Now, we have a 50-50 instruction that the country is soon going to get into, to a point where obviously we are going to discount you know, what you call, you know, house executives. Call them housewives, and this day and age you also have house husbands. But largely you have your housewives, which could be accounting maybe, you know, as you do your survey on the, especially among African, you know, females. How would retrospectively would we project? It's a bit of an unfair question, I'm aware, but given all of these, you know, policy instructs that we have, whether they would have any impact on this, you know, unemployment of African women in particular that we continue to have.
Okay, I think it's Fab again. Yeah, before we take this one.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine are just three other questions. The one is on the slide 26, which is the unemployment rate by province, and the other one, the unemployment rate by population group. Dissecting the first one, which is perhaps the easiest one, is there any statistical significance in the difference of 7% between each category? Or is that just one of these things we sometimes come up with in stats? The other thing is on slide 26, the unemployment rate by province. A note is made on the quarterly difference with respect to the Eastern Cape. It's been down, but I was looking at the Western Cape here. It would appear as if the second quarter, the unemployment rate is up. I said it would appear. If, I'm sorry if you did explain this at the time. But we go back to that very first question I raised. Is this in any way related to manufacturing, retailing, and that kind of thing? Because we've heard how the textile industry has lost jobs in this respect. And secondly, thirdly, do you in stats, when we talk of structural, frictional, and cyclical, do we or can we relate any of these concepts to sectoral employment? Where one could say this form of employment, say farming, agriculture,
is cyclical, or manufacturing the commodities X. Is it possible to do that with respect to that? Because the question that I really want to ask is, in which sector, if one is able to do that, would you have the highest structural unemployment? Thank you.
Okay, response.
Terry, the questions are getting more complicated by the hour. Well, starting from the questions by Honorable Farm around them. Can an analysis be done by sector in terms of the labor force? Yes, indeed it can. Is there a relationship between the structural unemployment and how sectors, what sectors are engaged? Yes, indeed, there should be that possibility. So theoretically, it is possible. And I think by bringing the employment, the quarterly employment service that we ask for, and this labor force service, there could be a relationship. But at the same time, the relationship is not that very direct, because certain industries are more amenable to mechanization and they can grow in terms of their contribution to the GDP and in terms of turnover, but not in relation to employment. So the relationship is a very tenuous one in certain sectors, including even agriculture, where you could presume that it's a labor-intensive area, and where I said that in Brazil, you realize that the ratio of labor to capital, and therefore the number of people employed in agriculture, are much more as a proportion to the number of people employed in agriculture in South Africa relative to other sectors of the economy. So, indeed, he's asking a very difficult question, but an appropriate question in terms of understanding labor market, and as well as how policy then intervenes if it has to resolve issues of unemployment or resolve issues of employment. The type of response is, yes, Honorable Johnson, yes, we believe in self-reporting. It has its limitations, but it looks like it's a very consistent reporting, self-reporting. So if all of us are telling not the truth, then that not the truth becomes the truth, because all of us consistently say so. So it's a philosophical issue around objectivity and what is truth. But I think we believe in the goodness of human beings, and in their self-reporting, they tell things that are consistent. And when we triangulate the information and look at it, we find that it is coherent and consistent. Of course, there will be outliers that we will have to take out of the system or consider differently, because outliers can actually be a reflection of reality rather than just an outlier. The question by Honorable Nguni on exported unemployment. I think it's possible that the drop in unemployment in the Eastern Cape may be the rise in unemployment in the Western Cape. It's quite possible. Or it might be that the closure of factories and so on. But you need to track and understand the relationship between the provinces, migration and so on. So there is scope for doing a dynamic model, that dynamic analysis of what actually is happening. At this stage, point in time, we are taking a snapshot at a time, but we are also looking at across time, and I think factoring migration into this may help for us to understand where were you working previously, where are you working now. That might be factoring the equation, but at the moment, it might still be a conjecture, because we haven't linked the evidence between those, but intuitively, it looks quite plausible. My colleagues will answer the other questions, but yes, we agree with the Honorable Dr. George on the issue that he's raising. I think my two colleagues will direct their rest of the questions.
I'm trying to find the easiest one. I think I wanted to talk to the issue around trends among African females and having the highest at 31.1% as compared to the other population groups. Not in any way trying to defend the number. I think what is also very clear is that the absolute number or the absolute pool of African women is also the highest across the other population groups. Therefore, the denominator also is quite high. And that's another issue that is contributing to when we see about 5.8% of white women. And moving from a total of about, say, the total number of women in South Africa who are not employed are estimated at about 2.2 million. And that 2.2 million is about 26.8% of the total number of persons estimated in the country at 4.1 million people who are within the population group that is supposed to be working, that are not working. Therefore, out of those 2.2 million, then we find that 31% of them are African women. But also, this also contributes to the social aspect of the livelihood of the blessed as they have come through the transition. This is now my personal social scientist view. And the level at which the black women have started to get into the market might have not been over time at the same rate as compared to the other groups, especially the whites. Therefore, I think that transition also needs to be taken into consideration. What is interesting is also that maybe we are not seeing the levels and the numbers of black women getting into the market at the rate that is expected. Then I know there was a question that was asked, what should government do? I wish I knew. But this is another policy issue that needs to be taken into consideration. We still expect to have more black women getting into the market, but they are not getting into the market at or as fast as they would have expected to be. And I think, yes, that's another policy issue that the government should be able to consider. And I think it's one of the things that they have in their policies, your affirmative actions, you hope you could get an evaluation that says how far has it gone. And then there's an issue around what Honorable Fass is asking around this. Structural, cyclical, and traditional unemployment. I think it's a very serious issue that needs a lot of research. What we can provide is a tip of an iceberg or a picture that says this is the picture of unemployment. But there is a lot of research and work that might have to be done by sector, understanding each and every sector and in how it contributes ultimately into the overall unemployment. And once that it is done, it is easier to answer some of the questions, because that's exactly where the answers are around. Whether you describe it as developmental issue or just a structural issue alive. Therefore, we have the tip of an iceberg, we just get a picture, but the answers are lies in better understanding the details within the different sectors and industries.
I'll answer some of the questions and leave the one on skills for Dr. Matlape and the one on statistical significance to intact. On the discouraged and on the not economically active population, those are available and those are not. We have all the information. We don't have to stick to the three that we have decided upon, but we needed to have a cut-off point, and then we thought the ones that contributed with the greatest numbers were those three that we said, okay, if you say there are no jobs in the area, you have no skills, you have no hope, those are the ones that are always cited by people much more than the other categories. But if we wanted to include other categories, we'll be able to do so, so the information could be made available. And on what industries have contributed to the loss of jobs in the Western Cape, retail is one of them. And then it is agriculture and manufacturing. If you go to the release from page 6 to page 8, we go through what industries have contributed to the 106,000 jobs that we have observed nationally. Apart from community services, it is transport, it is construction, you have other industries there at a national level. Now, if you want to look at the geographical spread of these 106,000 jobs, those are between pages 6 and 8. We tell you what jobs were gained in the Western Cape, what jobs were in the Eastern Cape, in all of the other provinces. And then the one on women, yeah, it's part of a cut. You have industries, and you have industry one, would be agriculture, that would include fishing. Then you have, but if people are selling the fish, then they are in trade, because then they are running a business. So you have about 10 categories, so all those industries, we have all of them. Then there's a question on house executives and their impact on unemployment. We have the information. But according to the system, to the SNA production boundary, when you look at women who are doing housework, they're not considered as employed unless you're going to do what is called now satellite accounts. We want to run a survey on the time use, looking at what do people do with their time. And when you look at the time that women spend looking at their children, doing housework, and none of that is considered to be work under the SNA production boundary. Now, you need to do more studies to be able to say, now, if you were to take this woman who was looking after her children and look at people who are looking after children the same age as the respondents' children, then you say, how much would you pay them per hour? And then you then form your satellite account. So it's a study on its own that would need to be done so that we can see exactly how many people are we leaving out who should ideally be considered to be employed or to be working. And Tabi will take the one on the statistical significance, and Dr. Mohale, the one on skills.
For the other two colleagues coming. The question that is being raised here, which is really a policy issue, sparking a number of discussions. If we look at information on buildings, I'm not sure whether it's, but let me refer to the one that has been released last month, construction. You approved plans, lettable space in retail or construction for retail. You can see that in the area of housing, construction is beginning to decline. In retail, it grew, but it's also slowing down. Now you get employment in construction. What we may anticipate, therefore, is that will also do the same. Now, the business people in provinces and government in provinces and everywhere have to take keen interest in this kind of information and bring it together and say, what is it that then gets done, given this set of circumstances? the quarterly GDP has to be brought in there as well, because on a quarter-by-quarter basis, you see which sectors are contributing to the growth or the levels of the economy. Retail trade, we release retail statistics all the time, and all those then have to come into this pot of policy. That then looks at how best, under the circumstances, can we shape and guide things, rather than the auto, running on auto mode, because it is in shaping them and guiding them that you probably get a lot more value add, rather than when they run on auto mode. But to what extent the provincial and local government and all those are keenly aware of these dynamics is, I think, a question that we need to try and address.
The question of the significance of the 7% is a question that requires calculations to be done. The information that would be required to answer that question, we don't have it now. It is a technical question that would require the calculation of confidence intervals, where you say anything within the confidence interval is not statistically significant, and anything or any number that falls outside the confidence interval is statistically significant. And therefore, without the confidence interval, that question cannot really be answered.
I think the question that we're giving input to had already been addressed by Member CK. This was with regard to characterization of the type of employment and the cost thereof, and relating that to skills. We have the formal sector, you know, employment section that actually gives statistics to that, and we need to link this household-based survey with that and then do the in-depth analysis of both in order to further really categorize. But I think that is then left to the analyst to really give further details on it.
I just wanted to make one comment that while we look at the labor market issues and the phenomena out of the labor force survey, for us to properly understand other social issues that impede and other economic issues that can contribute to the labor market dynamics, we might need to encourage more brought an open-minded approach to the work around the labor market, especially when we deal with it as a social issue, because then there would be many other surveys that would have to give a better understanding about the population before you talk about the labor market. And once that has happened, then we are able to answer some of the questions. So it's just that encouragement to look at even the other surveys, like the income and expenditure survey. They show that the types of economic resources and how they are spent within the household. Then you have the labor market. Then you have the issues around the community survey, where Honorable Ngoni is talking about the issues of migration. Our better understanding in terms of how we see the unemployment rate changing can be attributed if we have a better understanding, like he has, of saying this is what you said about CS, what implications then that we have when we see these types of changes and dynamics. Therefore, I'm encouraging that as we look at one survey, it helps to broaden our minds. And also, what we try to do in the organization is to say the economic sector publishes data on each one of the industries, on a monthly, some and some on a quarterly basis. It helps our understanding if we look at them and compare with the economic statistics as they are then collected from the economic sector. So that combination of surveys and sources in improving our understanding would help a lot. Thanks.
It would be useful perhaps to us as we continue engaging with you in future the quarterly labor force surveys. One of the things you indicated was that this was partly in response to the IMF recommendations after they had also looked at our labor force survey. The question that may arise is then, are there areas based on these observations and recommendations of the IMF that SA think you still have to take action on? Or are you satisfied that you have been rise to the occasion?
I think there are about four. I can't remember off my head, three. The first one was about how do we establish household membership, because they were concerned that our definition of a household member was not adequate. They recommended that we use a usual member of household to classify people as being in house, as being household members. But we went and tested this, and we checked what the numbers will get when we are using our 4x4 rule and the usual member of household, and there was very little difference. And the reason we went at the 4x4 rule was because we did not want to double count. The definition of 4x4, we ask you if you spent four nights a week for the past 4 weeks. Yeah, at home. So in that house that you have.
Okay, proceed. You may not get a very honest answer from some of the men around here when you ask that question, but go ahead.
So then we say if you say yes to that, then you're a household member. But they were saying, oh, how about using usual member of household? So we went and did a test on these two, and we realized that our definition was the right one for the South African situation. The second one was on a carrying over information, because we visit people's houses four times a year, and once we go to your house, people say, you were here last quarter, my information has not changed. And we thought that was a good idea, but we have not had time to implement that, because we need to be able to clearly mark all the members of the household, and when we are carrying over that information, we have a plan on how we're going to do it. So that one recommendation was not implemented, but we are going to be implementing it. And that will also help us in getting panel data, which we try to run away from. But having a quarterly LFS, if a household remain in the sample four times a year, you can give some kind of panel information about those households. And the third one was, I can't remember, but there were four of them. They are in the report on our website. We have said that for these recommendations, these are the actions that we have taken, and then we say for these other four, we have not implemented them as yet, and here are the reasons for not doing so. Yes, there are some that we are definitely considering, like the carrying over of information.
Okay. You see the difficulty with a man involved in a polygamous marriage. The other quarter is elsewhere, the second quarter is elsewhere. And the other quarter, you just don't find him at all, because he might not form part of your sample at that time. We have a bit of a unique situation in the country. But thanks. That was very useful. I think it helps us also in understanding what is happening, and we will be watching the developments quite closely. We trust that you would come back to us as soon as also you have conducted the next quarterly report. But that brings us to the end of the session. And we thank you for having taken time out to come and breakfast on this. We know we could have done it earlier, but time could not permit, and we have found time today. You've also provided us with more information in addition to what is already on our website, which also is going to make useful reading for members of the committee, and will assist us also in engaging with you in the future. We thank you for that. Thanks, members. Tea outside at, I'm told there's tea now, but there also is lunch at 12.
I don't want to repeat what I always say to members about not having lunch when lunch has been set. So please don't. We are all invited to thank you for the people.
This is not a difficult meeting. I had already, you catch the substance, and then these other guys don't understand that these are not really quality people. They're throwing questions about policy to people who are just trying to provide info to policy makers. So they can't answer the policy questions accurately. All they can try and answer is how accurate you are relying on.
Does you find it difficult to listen to the recording?
It depends on the length of the report.
For me, it's so much easier when I have the laptop.
Last year, you know, it was like last year, no? last year.
Now it's
Called Kuli. Huh? Kuli. Oh.
Is not a gangster.
I know, but now you said that.